Hey there, listeners. Before we embark on a voyage to adventure today, I thought I'd give you all a heads up that my comic Explosion High Issue 2 is on Kickstarter right this moment. If you like messy superhero drama, teens getting into scrapes, flying sharks, and a giant monster, then head on over and see what we've got to offer you. Now, on with the show.
Get the cheese to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
I don't know.
Hi, and welcome to Casual Trek. My name is Charlie Etheridge Nunn. I'm a writer and I guess I am a classic choose-your-own-adventure book fan.
I'm Mars Reed Lobato. I am a writer, comedian, and I am a fan of the Star Wars, the two Star Wars choose-your-own-adventure game books, which came out in the 90s, where you play Habit Storm, who has a dog-shaped robot.
Literally.
Basically, wow. It's basically a dog-shaped robot. It's kind of great. You are the guy who helps transmit the Death Star plans at the end of the first book.
Oh.
So you get retconned out by Rogue One. What is funny is that you basically, you bump into Boba Fett in a bar and you gain his eternal enmity. Like, like Boba Fett hates you because you spilled his drink in a cantina, and he will try and kill you any chance he gets. Also, you kind of beat him up in a few fights.
I mean, it sounds fair. Why did you go and spill his drink? Obviously, you deserve that beating.
I think I rolled a 2 or something.
Okay, I actually realize I have a slightly better answer, because for me, it was born of lack of experience of the fighting fantasies until, I think, like their 25th anniversary or something. For me, the proper RPG hipster answer is my favorite one of these kind of books is Jason Morningstar's Metal Showcase 11 PM. And it's a choose your own adventure solo RPG type experience where you create a deadbeat kid who is trying desperately to gather together some friends and enemies into a metal band in order to play an 11 PM set at an all-ages metal nightclub and win $500.
Okay, this sounds like a plot line from Grange Hill.
Oh, it's amazing. Actually, if I'd gone at it with the Grange Hill sense, maybe I'd have died with it. But no, it's... You create each character, you kind of Mass Effect story style, try to go through a bit of story with each of them, trying to win them round to your side with extremely varied levels of success. And it even gets you mapping out the venue and the different places and the different things in it. I wrote about it once for Who Dares Rolls years ago now, I think. And yeah, it was surprisingly deeper than I thought it would be.
I always remember like the one, I think it was a Lone Wolf book, one like the later ones, where I don't know whether I just picked the right dialogue tree option or I misread a page number, because I went from starting out at a dock and somehow ended up at the bad guy's castle in the space of a lunch break at primary school.
I've heard good things about the Lone Wolf system. Another one which I love is called Cheat Your Own Adventure, and it's a one-page role-playing game where you collectively create a choose-your-own-adventure that isn't written down anywhere. You just have the name that you randomly generate. One person narrates what the character is doing, and then when they come to a decision point, everyone else around the table has to pitch in an option, going, you know, oh, you're sneaking down this hallway, there are goblins, and someone says, turn to page 14 if you wish to describe yourself as a couple of goblins. Someone else will go, turn to page 56 if you want to scare the goblins with the judicious use of curtains, a stick, and the sunlight. And then someone else might go, unclasp the obsidian slate from the back of the book if you wish to cast obscene magic at them. And then whoever wins that choice, you roll to see if that actually kills you or not. And then you cheat by going back, pick someone else's option, and they're now the narrator. It's a really fun warm-up exercise for a role-playing group. Takes maybe half an hour or so.
That sounds really fun. Anyway, Charlie.
Yeah, what?
Ask me why I'm here. Ask me why we're here.
Man, that's a big question. I don't know if we can solve that on a Star Trek.
In a material sense. In an immediate material sense.
Oh, God. Miles, why are we here?
Okay, well, a couple of weeks ago, I popped into one of my local secondhand books in Madison, Frugal Muse, and I came across a entry in the Which Way Books series, number 15, Star Trek, Voyage to Adventure, by Michael J. Dodge, and it was $2.98. Original book price was $1.95, and this was published in 1984. I picked it up.
What you're saying is it's a hot collector's item, given how much it's increased in value over the years.
Oh, yeah, and given the numerous page creases. I picked it up, put it down, went home, realized, like, 5 hours later, wait a second, this is prime casual Trek content. After then 5 minutes of dry heaving into the toilet for unironically using the word content, I realized I ran down, realized the shop was shut, realized that was what my wife meant when she said it's 9 o'clock in the evening, they'll be shut, as I was leaving, and then went back and bought it the next day.
Wow. That's quite the epic tale. And to be honest, I remember when you messaged me saying about this existing, it's like, oh, does this sound like not a casual enough thing? You know, does it sound extreme? But given that price, it's like, okay, if it was a full $3, maybe it would have been too serious Trek for us.
Yeah. I'm just currently looking at the other books in the series. There are no Star Trek books, but there is a book called Space Raiders and the Planet of Doom. That's number 11 in the series. There's number 13, Starship Warrior. That one can't be any more BS than Starship Traveler for Fighting Fantasy, where if you haven't collected the specific codes on all the correct planets, you can't finish the book and die.
Yeah, there have been some interesting ones like that. I used to record a segment in the Who Dares Roles podcast years ago when we were still doing podcasts for that site, and I was using a Rock Band mic as my microphone. And we'd spent the last half hour or so doing a Fighting Fantasy book, and we ended up repeatedly, like, naked, armed only with a banana in City of Thieves. I've never read City of Thieves. I don't know how accurate and legitimate that is to the gaming experience, or if Mike was just having his fun with us.
With a banana.
With a banana, yeah. I mean, it's better than being armed with nothing, I guess.
Better than being armed with grapes.
Yes.
Or a pointed stick. Everyone knows that bananas are more deadly than pointed sticks.
So you got this book.
Yep.
Eventually.
I got this book eventually, and okay. And I am now going to make good on my fret of content. Although there is a book in this series I want to pick up, which is number 6, Sugarcane Island, which has a tendency, which it feels like that one might go very racist very quickly.
Uh-oh.
But anyway, this isn't a racism podcast, this is a Star Trek podcast. So, Charlie, are you ready?
I mean, I'm reeling slightly from your segue, but yes.
Okay, first of all, attention!
Ah!
Which Way Books must be read in a special way. Do not read the pages in order. If you do, the story will make no sense at all. Instead, follow the directions at the bottom of each page until you come to an ending. Only then should you return to the beginning and start over again, making different choices this time. There are many possibilities for exciting adventures. Some of the endings are good, some of the endings are bad. If you meet a terrible fate, you can reverse it in your next story by making new choices. Remember, follow the directions carefully, and have fun.
Well, for jokes on them, I can't read.
Right. Before we go, I need to do a quick segue. Have you heard of the author Kim Newman?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Okay, he did the Anno Dracula series.
Yeah.
He wrote a book called Life's Lottery, which is basically which basically operates on the same rule of a choose your own adventure, where you can, you know, make the decision, this guy's decisions throughout his life, and it goes into weird, strange, and supernatural paths. If you actually read the book as a book, you actually get another story of a guy who is suffering a severe mental illness where he's experiencing his life out of order like a lottery.
Wow.
But the fun thing is, there's a moment where you can choose to have your character either masturbate to an episode of Doctor Who or an episode of Star Trek. If you choose Annette to masturbate to an episode of Doctor Who, you end up catapulted into the world of Doctor Who, where you're this cool science hero, and attractive blonde companions will give you blowjobs forever. If you choose to masturbate to Star Trek, you die sad and alone because you're masturbating to Star Trek.
Are you basically using this to tee me up for whatever this is going to be? Like,
no, I just remembered it, and since I remembered it, I have to share it to someone, because I swear I might be the only person to have read this book.
I genuinely can't tell if you are making this up or not.
Oh, no.
I have realized I need to get the sand timer out for these kind of diversions.
Oh, yeah. All right. Are you ready to actually play the game?
Okay. I've braced myself.
Okay. Charlie, you are an ensign in Starfleet, just graduated from the Starfleet Academy. Because of your high scores as a cadet, you have been assigned to the Starship Enterprise, commanded by Captain James Tiberius Kirk. As you pick up your space bag and prepare to beam aboard the Enterprise, you can remember the speech Admiral Trainor gave to your class of ensigns. Never forget that Starfleet's mission is to keep peace in the galaxy. Use force only when everything else has failed. And never forget the Prime Directive. Do not interfere with an alien race, even if you think you would be doing the right thing. We do not always understand the ways of other people, and sometimes our help may only make things worse. Power is a terrible thing, unless it is used wisely. Now, best of luck to all of you. The transport operator pushes the controls, and light surrounds you. You are beamed aboard the Enterprise. Turn to page 2. It is time to choose your assignment aboard the Enterprise. There is a board that shows the jobs available, but it does not say very much about them. If you want to try engineering, go to page 3. If you choose to work on the bridge, go to page 4. If you prefer a job in the science laboratory, go to page 5.
I was thinking science, but then bridge might have to make you do more voices.
All right. Okay. I love that apparently Starfleet Academy does not make you choose a major, and it's just like, yeah, sure, whatever. We'll get...
What color uniform do you like? Yeah, you're in that one. Fine.
This book has illustrations, and it's given your character what looks like a rather unflattering haircut. You look like the tall one from the Monkees. You look like Michael Nesmith.
Okay. I mean, that evidently was the style at that point in Star Wars.
The monkeys were apparently big in the 23rd century. Alright, okay, so we're going to choose to work on the bridge. Alright, you arrive on the bridge. On the display screen ahead, stars are flashing past. As you step from the turbo lift, Captain Kirk turns to face you. Welcome aboard! Ensign, the captain says. We've been receiving some strange transmissions from an uncharted planet in this sector. Your job will be to help Lieutenant Uhura translate and list them. You take a seat next to Lieutenant Uhura. She smiles and points to a huge pile of tape cassettes on one side of the console and a pair of headphones on the other. There's a lot of work to do, she says. Where do you want to start? Now, Charlie, if you wish to use the translating computer on the recordings already made, go to page 50. If you prefer listening to the transmissions through the headphones, go to page 43.
This is riveting stuff. I don't know what I expected.
For $2.98, what do you expect?
Okay, so it's either translate the tapes or just listen to them.
Yes.
Let's translate them, because if I listen to them, I get the feeling it'll be like, ha, you idiot, it's gobbledygook.
Okay, all right. You begin plugging tapes into the translating computer. After more than an hour, the computer screen reads, does not match known language patterns, appears to be a code. You switch the computer program from translate to decode, and call Lieutenant Uhura. In minutes, the screen shows, messages in, Klingon military code 7, message reads, have found large dilithium crystal mines, require support ships, planet is within Federation space, secrecy required. Uhura shows a message to Captain Kirk. So, it's clear on claim jumpers, is it? Kirk says. Oh, crap, I should have been doing the voice. So it's clear on claim jumpers, is it? Kirk says. I think we can give them a surprise. Ensign, choose a battle station. Now, Charlie,
yeah.
If you would like to sit at the weapons console, turn to page 48. If you prefer to take the helm and steer the Enterprise, go to page 77. These are decisions with no bad possibilities. A plan with no drawbacks.
This is no way to run a bridge.
You know the most important thing I get told on day one of any of the jobs I've worked?
Mm-hmm.
How the coffee machine works and where the toilets are.
Yeah, I don't know either of those right now. And I'm slightly terrified. Come on in. Where do you work? Well, sit there. Translate some stuff. Now, do you want to shoot some people?
Charlie, what? Do you want to shoot some people or do you want to drive the Enterprise?
I'll drive the Enterprise. I don't want to shoot anyone.
Oh, all right, fine. Okay. Jeez. It's your first day. You're not even supposed to be here today.
I shouldn't be responsible for murdering people on my first day.
You slide into the helmsman's seat and take hold of the controls that steer the Enterprise. Apparently it's Sulu's week off, I guess.
Yeah.
Warp factor 5, Ensign, Captain Kirk says, and you switch on the warp engines. Just like that, warp engines on. On the display ahead, the stars rush past, leaving streamers of colored light. Plot it on the sensors, Captain, says Mr. Spock. Take us out of warp, Ensign, says the Captain. Slow. Approach. You switch from warp drive to impulse power. The Enterprise glides towards the planet. Suddenly, streaks of energy flash across the viewing screen. The Enterprise shakes and the bridge lights flicker. You have to hold on to your seat. Klingons attacking, says Mr. Spock. An ambush, says the Captain, and we fell for it. Evasive action, helmsman. Great, Charlie. It's like you've been at the job for 2 hours, and already your front seat's on a galactic incident.
I've apparently doomed us all by translating this. That's amazing.
Okay, now, Charlie, if you want to dodge the ship behind the planet, turn to page 7. If you want to try to loop the Enterprise and get on the Klingon's tail, turn to page 62. If Star Trek operates by elite dangerous-styled relativistic physics, that one isn't happening.
Yeah, like shields cover the whole ship in your Star Treks. Like, shooting them in the arse isn't really gonna... Like, yeah, I think use the planet.
Alright, okay. Hopefully there's no one on the planet.
Yeah.
Alright. You push the controls hard to port side. The planet swings past the ship. The Enterprise trembles as it scrapes the planet's atmosphere. The structural damage, sir! You hear Mr. Scott say from the engineering console. Not so close next time, Ensign, says Captain Kirk. You don't turn and flip him off and say, it's my first day, mofo, but instead, another Klingon disruptor shot flashes past the Enterprise. You're in a tight orbit around the planet, the Klingon ship just behind you. Then, just ahead, you see two more Klingon ships waiting for you.
Oh no.
Warp speed now, helmsman, the captain orders. Mr. Scott says, the engines are damaged, Captain! I can't give you warp power for 20 seconds yet! Okay, my Scotty seems less Scottish and more Indian.
Yeah.
Kirk.
That's not great.
That's not good. Kirk says, Scotty, we may not be here in 20 seconds. Any ideas, helmsman? Again, what? It's your first day!
Oh my god, I just have to hope this is part of some elaborate hazing ritual.
Alright, okay, Charlie, if you try to turn the Enterprise and run for deep space away from the planet, turn to page 78. If you want to fly the ship directly between the Klingon cruisers, trying to surprise them, turn to page 80.
Oh my god.
Look,
oh,
don't pressure. Give Charlie the Temp these decisions!
Okay, like, flying away from them is probably the more sensible one. I kind of want to know what happens if we go between them, because they might not fire, because they might not want to hit each other, even though it is a very stupid idea.
All right, so you want to fly the ship directly between the Klingon cruisers?
Yeah, fuck it, it's my first day, I'll blame it all on Kirk. I'll be like, you should never have given an ensign this level of power. What's he doing? He's the captain.
You press forward on the impulse thrusters, aiming the Enterprise right between the two attacking ships. They fire again, and your shields flare with explosion. Then the shooting stops. We have warp power, Mr. Scott says, and you switch on the warp drives. In seconds, the Klingon ambushers are a million miles behind you. Not bad, Ensign, Captain Kirk says. The Klingons couldn't shoot at us without hitting each other. Did they teach you that at the Starfleet Academy? It seemed like a good idea, you say. It did to me, too, when I was an ensign, Kirk says. Of course I was on a much smaller ship. Then he laughs. But it was a good idea. Welcome aboard, helmsman. The end.
What?
The end.
The end?
The end.
Oh.
That was your first day, and nothing bad happened to you ever again in the whole of Starfleet.
Uh-huh.
Charlie. How, on a scale of 1 to 10, how was your voyage to adventure?
Well, I can see why they drink a lot in the Enterprise.
Right. Okay, Charlie, do you want to jump through the Guardian of Forever time portal back to when you were first beamed aboard the Enterprise and make a different decision?
Yeah, what if my life played out in a different way?
Okay, do you want to try engineering or do you want a job in the science laboratory?
Wow, I'm gonna sliding doors it and see what my life would have been like in science.
All right, okay, page 5. You enter the ship's science laboratory. The walls are lined with crystal panels in rainbow colors, glowing with lights. At the center of the room, Science Officer Spock is working at a computer console, unlike any you have ever seen before. Mr. Spock turns to face you. Good day, Ensign. We are now in a part of space where the flow of time is twisted back on itself. I have constructed this device to analyze the time flow. Please help me adjust the crystal control frames. You take a step forward. Suddenly, one of the crystal panels cracks and shatters. Colored light sprays across the room and over Mr. Spock. Stay out of the time field, Spock orders. Do not touch me. If you obey, Mr. Spock, turn to page 82. If you want to try to pull Spock out of the field despite his orders, turn to page 86.
Oh my god. So is this time field why I was living a life as a helmsman mere moments ago?
Sure. Look, it's this book seems to operate in object permanence. If you don't see it happening, it's not happening.
So while this is going on, are they also translating the message up in the helm?
I guess so.
Okay, so you're more original series savvy than me. Whenever Spock says something like this, kind of, oh no, leave me alone. I'll, you know, do all this even if I get horrendously injured or whatever. Does anyone ever listen to him? So don't. It doesn't feel like they do from what I've experienced.
I think it's only if you're a named character and you don't listen to Spock, things will turn out well. If you're an unnamed character and you don't listen to Spock, you're probably going to get turned into, like, a salt deposit or something.
Oh, shit. I've just realized this character's, like, me here. I'm not named.
No,
I'm doomed.
But you see, the thing is, you know, you are the main character of this book, so we could be operating under Mary Sue logic, where you are the hero of the universe.
Okay, with that under that advisement, let's try it. Let's actually try and ignore Spock. I learned this from Kirk, I'll say, you know, if I have to fill in a report afterwards of why is he dead.
Okay. You reach for Mr. Spock's arm. The rainbow light falls across you as well. You feel very dizzy, and for several moments you cannot see. Then your sight clears. You and Mr. Spock are standing in a ship's science laboratory, but not the one you were in before. You should not have done that, Ensign, Spock says, but I thank you for trying to help. Where are we? You ask. Spock looks around. This equipment is very familiar, he says. I think we are still aboard the Enterprise, but about 40 years in our past. The door opens. Three security men are standing there. They are wearing old-style Starfleet uniforms, very different from yours. Intruder alert! One says. Before Mr. Spock can explain, a guard says, Careful! He's a Vulcan! They're stronger than we are! Another fires his phaser, and Mr. Spock falls.
Oh no.
Man, I think this might be the worst first day you've had so far.
Oh wow, yeah. I mean, I was just marveling at how non-specific the uniforms for past were, and now I've accidentally got Spock killed in the past.
Yeah, I as far as I can tell, you know, given the time frame, they're going to be dressed like guys from Enterprise.
Oh god, one of the uglier times that they had uniforms. Okay,
well, all right. Here are your choices. If you think you had better surrender before things get any worse, turn to page 49. If you run for it, turn to page 102.
I mean, these are still Starfleet. It's in theory, they should be all right. I don't know. Like, again, if it's Enterprise times, they've already been a bit, you know, about Spock. So I assume I'm human. So they're not going to get all, like, you know, Archer and Trip on me. I'll surrender and hopefully we'll be able to talk it out.
All right, okay. You put up your hands and the security men take you and the unconscious Mr. Spock to cells in the ship's brig. An invisible force field lock you in. Man, it's your first day. You don't know where the coffee machine is. You don't know where the toilets are, but you know where the brig is because you've been locked in it.
Yeah. Again, like, it. What a first day.
You try to explain what has happened, but the guards do not seem to believe you. Your uniforms and equipment are different from theirs. When you say that the Vulcan with you is Science Officer Spock, one of them laughs. That's impossible. Science Officer Spock is on this ship. I saw him this morning. Wait a second.
Hang on.
Yeah, you picked that up as well, right?
Yeah.
Hang on. So... Didn't they say 40 years in the past?
Yeah.
Right, hang on.
Are they... So, at this point, do they know how Vulcans age?
Okay, I don't think the Enterprise would even have been around 40 years in the past.
Huh.
Unless this book is making some very wild statements about, like, the Enterprise traveling at light speed... creates a kind of time dilation effect where things move at a slower pace on the ship as opposed to back home. But no, I think we just found a really bad editing error.
Huh.
Hmm. Oh well.
Weird.
Soon you're left alone in your cell. You cannot see or hear Mr. Spock. At the Academy, you had a class in escaping from enemy ships. Now you try to remember what they taught you. Charlie, if you intend to escape, turn to page 88. If you would rather wait, turn to page 111.
I mean, let's face it. Only one of these is fun.
Okay, so wait then. Got it.
No.
Oh, right. Okay. Escape. Right.
I was caught in the same place as Kirk. Like, obviously, I'm not getting my conversation or anything, so... Yeah, I guess.
Okay, all right. In the Starfleet Academy escape class, they told you that sometimes force fields can be shorted out with a piece of metal. You have a metal belt buckle that might work, but you also remember it is a dangerous trick. Okay, a piece of metal.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's some Spinal Tap, like, right there. Like, when the guys... You ever seen Spinal Tap?
Weirdly, no.
Oh, man. Okay, never mind. Okay. If you decide to wait and see what happens, turn to page 111, which is basically the same option as the just sit in the corner and do nothing. If you try to short out the force field with your belt, turn to page 90.
I mean, let's try it. Let's try shorting it out.
Okay. Oh, okay. You take off your belt buckle and bring it close to one of the metal plates that generates the force field. As you pry the buckle against the plate, there is a bright flash of energy. You think that the flash is much too close for comfort. Then you think that this wasn't a very good idea. That is the last thing you know. The end. Charlie, it's your first day at work. You don't know where the coffee machine is. You don't know where the toilets are. You don't even know where your room is. But guess what, mate? You're dead. 48 in the past.
On just having a look at all this, right? So this must have been around the 2266 to 69 was when the original series happened. So we're talking 2226 to 2229.
Yeah.
There was not an Enterprise at that point. Like, the 1701 was launched in 2245. The NX-01 was retired in 2161. I know, obviously, this author didn't have the amazing foresight to go, I know all of the details that could be found on Memory Alpha about all of this. But it is incredible he's managed to pick that exact spot where there was no Enterprise at all. So yeah, well done him. Also, I'm dead now, apparently.
You're dead now, on your first day.
And in the past. Like,
yeah, that's awkward. I'm sure Spock will be fine, because Spock's always fine. Apart from that one time when he died.
Apparently Spock's here as well, which, you know, as a child...
Oh no, that's going to violate the Blinovich limitation effect as seen by Doctor Who. That means, like, when the two Spocks encounter each other, there might be a paradox.
Oh my god. Of a, like, time authority, I forget the exact name of them, but that lot, are they Temple... going to end up getting involved?
Temporal Investigations, probably.
That's them. Well, hopefully they'll undo it, you know?
Unless Spock is going to Back to the Future 2 his way out of this and just be in the background of a lot of very important scenes.
True.
Right, okay, fortune favors the bold. Actually, that burst of energy didn't kill you, but actually sent you back in time. And in back in time, I meant back to the future, to you in the transporter room on the Enterprise, looking at the big board saying, choose a job. So, do you want to just try one more time, go to engineering, and see if maybe you don't die?
Yeah, let's see. Maybe I'll find out where to make the coffee and where to have a piss.
Right, let's try engineering. You get out of the turbo lift on the ship's engineering deck. Ahead of you are the enormous warp engines that power the Enterprise. To one side, you see Chief Engineer Scott working at the control panel. As you start towards Mr. Scott, a tall man in lieutenant's uniform steps into your path. Another new lieutenant? He says, sounding annoyed. Well, I'm Lieutenant Grogan, and I know what to do with you. He hands you an electronic sweeper. Take this and get to work cleaning the desk. Ah, okay, brilliant. Okay, this is how first days are meant to go.
Yep. Yeah, tidy up this shit.
Okay, alright, so there's a little illustration here where Lieutenant Grogan, who kind of looks like Harvey Keitel, is handing you a vacuum cleaner.
Okay, like...
Like a proper vacuum cleaner. What's even more impressive is he's holding it, like... up to, like, your belly height with one hand. So clearly, don't mess with Lieutenant Grogan. He can end you in a fist fight.
So, is this at least a space vacuum cleaner? Or is it like a Henry?
It looks like a traditional... It doesn't look like a Henry. It just looks like a vacuum cleaner. It even has the bag.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, if you agree to obey Lieutenant Grogan and start sweeping, with a vacuum, go to page 6. If you want to complain to Mr. Scott that you're an ensign, not a janitor, go to page 24.
And do they even have janitors? Like, this is my first day, and this is very first day of the job kind of shit to be doing. So I guess I'll give it a go.
All right, okay. Lieutenant Grogan nods his head as you take the sweeper and go to work. Because of the electronic sweeper, cleaning the deck is not hard work, but it is very dull. As you sweep a corner, behind some machinery, you see something small and shiny and very fast move across the floor in front of you. Curious, you follow the shiny streak. Clearly you didn't find out where the toilets were in time. Soon it disappears into what looks like a solid wall, but when you tap the wall, you find that a panel is loose, and behind it is a tunnel just big enough for you to enter. You do not see anyone else around. You go into the tunnel. The only light comes from the little headlight on your electronic sweeper. You can hear the hum of the ship's main power lines all around you. On the floor are little bits of metal and plastic, and you follow their trail. After many twists and turns, you come to a small room. In the corners are piles of sparkling metal, electronic parts. In the middle of the floor is something that looks like a large mouse, but made of metal. A robot! It looks up at you with red, electric eyes. Now, Charlie! Yes. If you decide to hit at the mouse, turn to page 21. If you want to hold still and see what the robot does, go to page 10.
See, I wonder if angering it might be a bit bad at this point. Like, is there an illustration showing the size of a mouse? Is it like an actual mouse? Is it like a scutter?
In my head, it looks like that was the little mouse droids from Star Wars that Chewbacca rolls at.
Okay.
Let's say, for the intents and purposes, that it basically has the same size and shape of a Henry Hoover.
Ooh. Okay. Maybe Henry's upset about being usurped by this space vacuum cleaner. I'll hold on and see what it's up to, because I can always hit it later, hopefully.
You stand very still, watching the metal mouse. It starts to crawl near your electronic sweeper, then it reaches towards the machine with shiny steel claws. Very quickly, you turn the sweeper's control up to high power. The mouse is sucked inside. It makes beeping noises from inside the bag.
Success?
If you want to look at your captive right now, turn to page 16. If you choose to leave the tunnel and show the mouse to an officer, go to page 14.
Let's show it off. You know, look what I've caught.
All right. You follow the tunnel back to the engineering deck. Mr. Scott is working at the main panel. Many of the lights are red. You know that means trouble. On the other side of the room is Lieutenant Grogan. He is looking straight at you, and he seems very angry. Excuse me, Mr. Scott. Excuse me, Mr. Scott, you say, but I think I found something important. Scott says, "Och, not now, Ensign! We've got systems breaking down all over the ship! Take it up with Mr. Grogan over there!"
Oh.
You see Lieutenant Grogan beckoning towards you. Charlie, if you agree to tell Grogan, turn to page 20. If you want to pull the robot mouse out of the sweeper bag right now, go to page 11.
Oh, God. I don't want to deal with Grogan, but at the same time, it might kill him. So let's show it off to him.
Okay. You reach into your bag of your sweeper and pull out the little robot, which beeps and blinks its red eyes. "Eh, what's this?" Mr. Scott says as you show him the mouse. Quickly, you tell the chief engineer about the robot's hiding place and its nest of stolen electronic parts. "That's a strange tale," Mr. Scott says. Apparently he's Liverpudlian. "But it makes sense. With all the little breakdowns you've been having around the ship, let me have the robot. The chief engineer turns the robot over and points at a line of writing in strange, sharp characters. "This is Klingon writing," he says. "Now I understand. The Klingons slit this beastie aboard the ship to wreck us, one part at a time." Not quite, says a voice from one side. You and Mr. Scott turn to see Lieutenant Grogan pointing a gun at you. It is not a Federation phaser gun, but a Klingon disruptor. "You're a Klingon spy," you say. My disguise is excellent, is it not? It fooled all of you completely, the lieutenant says. I am Commander Krogan of the Klingon Imperial Navy. Please put your hands up. Charlie, you have no choice. Turn to page 29.
See, okay, at least he said please. I find in these kind of moments where you're being taken hostage, manners don't cost you anything.
Krogan says, now my rank is commander, but soon I will be a captain. You see, you are wrong about our robot. It is not supposed to wreck the Enterprise, only damage it and make it easy for us to capture. One of our battle cruisers will soon be arrive to do just that, but you won't be here to see it, I'm afraid. Now, give me the robot. Charlie, if you hand the robot to Krogan, turn to page 32. If you decide to throw the robot and at the spy and try to grab his gun, go to page 31.
I mean, that's a very Star Trek thing to do.
Right,
I know that I'm not necessarily a named person, despite being the perspective here, but let's do it. Let's fling it at him and try and grab the gun.
Okay, you have an illustration here. It actually does look like a robot mouse, which is kind of disappointing. Your monkey's hairstyle has been replaced by making you look like Mark Hamill from the back, with his shaggy Star Wars hair. Scotty looks like Mo Howard.
Wow.
Okay. You throw the metal mouse at Krogan. You and Mr. Scott both rush the Klingon spy. Krogan cannot shoot both of you, and one of you is certain to capture him. Unfortunately for you, Krogan still has time for one last shot, and the gun is pointed at you. Its flash is the last thing you see. The end.
Wow. Well, I guess I was the unnamed extra.
Okay, Charlie.
Yeah?
Because of your earlier experience with the time crystal when you went to the science desk, you have the choice to be flung back in time to make another choice.
Oh my god.
Okay, so Charlie, are you going to hand over the robot to Krogan, or are you going to try and yeet it at him?
As tempting as it is to yeet it at him anyway. Just for stubbornness' sake, let's hand it over.
Alright, okay. You put the robot mouse into Krogan's hand. It blinks his electric eyes, looking at the Klingon's gun. You realize that the Klingon is still programmed to steal electronic parts, and Klingon disruptors are electronic, as opposed to the Klingon's infamous meat guns, of which we know so much about.
Of course.
The robot reaches for the gun with its steel claws and pulls it out of Krogan's grip. Together, you and Mr. Scott jump on the Klingon and pin him to the floor. In minutes, security answers your call. As Krogan is led away, he clicks at the mouse robot, which beeps and runs away to hide under a table. Mr. Scott laughs. Then the engineer says to you, "That was a nice piece of work, Ensign. Saving the Enterprise isn't bad at all for your first cruise." Mr. Scott smiles, and you know you will not be sweeping any more decks. The end.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thanks to some timey-wimey stuff, I survived that one. But, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's see. It's 45. It's 46 minutes now. Charlie, do you want to be displaced in time and try a different path than before on your voyage to adventure?
A different path than before?
Well, you know, just, you know, take one of the different parts, you know, maybe don't grab Spock and just leave him to get, like, blown up by the time crystals, or you do listen with the headphones.
Ooh, actually, yeah, let's leave Spock to get, you know,
okay, all right,
with my time.
Okay, Mr. Scott smiles and you know you will not be sweeping any more decks, because you just spontaneously combusted and are thrown backwards through, I'm just making this up.
Oh my god.
And you are thrown backwards in time, and time, and time, and okay, science laboratory. Okay, stay out of the time field, Spock orders. Do not touch me. If you obey Mr. Spock, turn to page 82. If you try to pull Spock out of the field despite his orders, turn to page 86. You know how one of these stories ends. It's of you electrocuting yourself with your belt buckle like a tool.
I mean, you say like a tool. I was going to say like a badass hero. But yeah, okay, fine. We'll let Spock do this.
All right.
See you in minus 40 years.
Okay, right, page 82. You stand still as Mr. Spock is commanded. Spock begins to flicker in a spray of rainbow light, as in the ship's transporters. Then he fades away and the light stops. You go to the computer console, trying to figure out if it can tell you where Mr. Spock is and how to bring him back. Unfortunately, the display and notes are all in Vulcan shorthand, which you cannot read. After a while, you figure out that the main control of the time analyzer is a large lever on the computer console, but the notes do not tell you which way to move the lever. Charlie, If you push the lever forward, turn to page 61. If you pull the lever back, turn to page 92.
Wow, this really is just a coin toss.
Pretty much.
Okay, let's...
Do you have a coin?
Miles, I'm not made of money.
You don't even have a tuppenny piece? A 2p piece?
I have a D20. It looks kind of like slightly, you know, kind of like a strong tea. It's got an odd color to it.
Okay, so 1 to 10, mm-hmm. You'll push the lever forwards. 11 to 20, you'll pull the lever back.
Okay. I rolled a 3.
Okay, all right. That means that you push the lever forward, and we're turning to page 61.
Well, forward's hopefully bringing back forward through time.
You push the control lever forward. Around you, the crystal panels flash with light. You feel weightless for a moment, then the light stops. Nothing has happened, you think. Then you see that your uniform has changed. Stuck into your belt is a long knife. Oh man, I know where this is going.
Uh-oh.
You open the door. In the corridor, Mr. Spock is walking in the middle of four security crewmen. Spock's hands are tied, and the security crew are pointing knives and phaser guns at him. All of them wear uniforms like yours. One of the guards spots you. Ensign, he snaps. Help us take this prisoner to the brig. He's a Vulcan, and they're dangerous.
Oh my god.
Okay, so you've just yeeted yourself into the Mirror Universe, I think.
Apparently so.
Okay, I'm just thinking that you're probably wearing like the Uhura one with like the with the midriff showing and the thigh high boots.
Well, you know, as anyone should be.
Right. Okay, Charlie, if you go to the guards and wait for a chance to help Mr. Spock later, turn to page 95. If you attack the guards right now, turn to page 98.
Let's go with them.
All right.
And see if we can break them out later. Because, you know, I learned from watching those Mirror Universe episodes, they're not the most subtle people. Direct attack is what they'd expect. But sneaking around, they've got no clue how to deal with that.
Okay, so here we go. Sure, you say, and join the group guarding Mr. Spock. You go to the ship's brig and Spock is put in the prison cell. Watch him while we get the captain, a guard tells you. Then they leave you alone. Quickly, you open the cell door and free Mr. Spock. What's going on? You ask. I believe we have traveled sideways in time, Spock says. Captain Kirk and some of the other officers once visited an alternative universe, like a mirror image of ours. There the crew were all evil, violent versions of the people we know. How can we get home? You ask. We must call our Enterprise on subspace radio and then trade places with our mirror cells through the transporter. That means we must each do a different task and meet later. Charlie, If you want to send the subspace radio message, turn to page 84. If you want to set the transporter, turn to page 99.
Let's try the transporter.
Okay. You make your way carefully to the transporter room, avoiding the many arguments and fights you see in the hallways. The mirror crew seems to do nothing but argue with each other. Through the transporter room door, you can see two security ensigns. You know them. That is, you know their mirror selves. Their names are Black and Wu. They both have phasers. While you have only a knife and the two people you know are very good shots.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. Are you saying oh dear the fact that their names are literally Black and Wu?
I mean, that's not great either.
All right. Okay, Charlie.
Yeah.
If you try to attack them anyway, hoping these two are not so good, turn to page 96. If you try to trick Black and Wu into leaving the room, turn to page 101.
It's going to have to be the tricking, because if anything, they're probably going to be better in a much more martial society, right?
Yep. Okay. You walk casually into the transporter room. Hi, Black. Hello, Wu, you say, as if nothing is the matter. What do you want? Black says. I just heard two ensigns in the dining room said you two couldn't hit the broadside of a Klingon cruiser, you say. What? Shouts Wu. I'll give those two a good shooting lesson. Wait, says Black. We have to guard this room. I'll do that, you say. Good deal, says Wu, and they leave. Quickly, you go to work. Send the transporter as Mr. Spock told you to do. Soon Spock comes in. The message is sent, he says. We have no time to waste. Security is coming. You hear shouts from the hallway as you and Spock stand on the transporter platform. Rainbow-colored light surrounds you. Go to page 116. The transporter light disappears. You are still standing in the Enterprise transporter room, but standing in front of you are the ship's officers. And they're smiling! The mirror crew did not smile. Welcome back! Spock! Captain Kirk says. I was interested to meet your mirror self again, but I'm glad to have the real you aboard. Thank you, Captain. Spock says. I could not have made it back without the ensign's help. In that case, Kirk says, I'm very glad to have you back, ensign. Somebody has to get my officers out of the trouble they get into. Mr. Spock smiles. Two others laugh at the captain's jokes. Soon, you are laughing too. And you know that your adventure aboard the Enterprise has only just started. The end.
So, yeah, I guess what? We laugh, freeze frame, titles, done.
Credits.
Say my name, Spock. I need promotions. Tell the captain who I am. He'll forget all about this. Just an ensign saved the day and brought you back from the Mirror Universe. And I still don't know where to take a shit.
Okay, all right, okay. I'm just glancing at the page across from 116, and I'm guessing this is the end of if you'd done the other way and had, like, gone back in time.
Oh, yeah.
When you can see again, you are standing in the science laboratory of your Enterprise, the piece of crystal panel on the floor. Captain Kirk is there, looking at the broken crystal. Then he turns and sees you. There you are, Spock, he says. Where have you been? I couldn't find you anywhere on the ship. The ensign and I were doing an experiment, Spock says, but we were on the Enterprise all the time. You and Mr. Spock exchange a secret smile. There's some Charlie Spock slash fiction right there.
There are some vibes going on. Wow. Okay, so am I some sort of weird chronal like entity? Am I going to become a Wesley Crusher or a Charlie X?
I think thanks to me screwing up so we can go through the book again and again, I think you're more a Billy Pilgrim from Slaughterhouse-5 that you were unstuck in time.
Oh shit.
Oh, speaking of unstuck in time, I am flicking through this book some more. You grab your other self and hold on as Mr. Spock steps off the transporter platform. You feel very dizzy and weak. The other you walks right through your arms, as if you were a ghost, and turns to look at you. Mr. Spock says, you have changed the past, ensign. Now there is only one future, only one you. The other one does not exist anymore, but thank you for what you did to save me. Goodbye, you hear yourself speaking. You do not know which one of you spoke. Then there is only one of you in the room. And the illustration has basically the ensign, which is you, holding the faded version of the ensign, which is also you. And from where they're both positioned, it looks like one of you is kissing the other.
Well, at that point, I guess. Why the hell not? Wow. Okay, important question about this illustration. Do I still have the monkey's hair?
One of you kind of has the monkey's hair to the point where it's covering your eyes. The other one kind of has Mark Hamill in Star Wars where, I may have to, send you some screen caps of some of the incredible artwork, for show notes.
Definitely. And if you're on the Nerd and Tie Discord, I'm sure we will also share them when this episode airs on the Casual Trek channel.
I'm just flicking through, like, somehow there is a series of decisions which gets you onto a planet and doing adventures.
What?
Like there's an illustration of Kirk and Bones in a cave shooting phasers at stuff.
God, I didn't even get to meet Bones.
No.
Wow. Okay. So it really is just this. I figured these must just be really short adventures, but it sounds like yes, but also there are millions of the things.
Oh, here's another one where you die. You take a few steps into the darkness. Suddenly a metal panel gives you a small electric shock, and you stumble away into a glass wall. It shatters and liquid helium pours out. You do not even have time to feel cold.
God, I mean, that's not even...
that's not even, like, a noble death. You basically just, like, fart around in the darkness like a tit and kill yourself.
That's something that you get warned against with, like, you know, workplace videos about slips, trips, and falls, you know? You'd feel so embarrassed if you worked for Starfleet and you died in such a mundane way. If it wasn't like, oh yeah, I went back in time and merged with my past self, or, you know, I got exploded by an infiltrating monster, or, you know, even getting electrocuted with the belt buckle, I was back in time. You know, if you just fell over and died, just shocked yourself and died, you'd feel a right wally, wouldn't you?
Oh, I am. Okay, I seem to have found the choice where you tried to smash the robot mouse with your space vacuum, and it kills you.
Oh.
Oh, wait, no. You swing your sweeper at the little robot. It beeps loudly and scurries out of the way. The sweeper hits the wall with a crash. Its headlight breaks. You see the creature's red glowing eyes disappear into the distance. Now you are in the dark, deep within the Enterprise, surrounded by high voltage cables. You hope someone finds you before you touch one of them. The end.
Wow. Like, so wow. Not even death, just feeling like a wally.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I mean, I'm sure we've all had first days at work which have felt a bit like that.
Like, but clearly, yeah, this is a basic dialogue tree, which, so, Charlie, how satisfied were you with your voyage to adventure?
Well, I think I peaked early. You know, I may have been rapidly changing roles from, you know, translating things to steering the ship and working out kind of like tactics in a violent situation. But I feel there's where I did my best. Touching Spock and dying in the past. not ideal. And then, yeah, that last engineering one. Yeah, could have gone better. Could have, by the sounds of it, gone a lot more embarrassing. Wow. What a journey it's been.
There are a few other Star Trek related tie-in game books. I may have looked on eBay for some, because
I don't know. I both am regretting having got rid of my Star Trek : The Next Generation : for VHS. Board game, but also kind of pleased to have ditched it. Maybe Tabletop Simulator has a version of it that we could both do online.
See, maybe since we now are releasing these episodes on YouTube, I do have some of the old PC games on GOG.
Uh-oh.
Those have an incredible disregard for life.
Yeah, I've got at least one of them, but it's on disk, and I don't have a machine with a disk drive anymore.
Right, so yeah, that was our voyage to adventure.
Yeah, riveting and deadly, as it turns out.
Just don't touch anything. It's your birthday.
Don't touch anything or anyone. Maybe you have to take the first move and ask, where do I get a coffee?
All right, so that was that. We hope you enjoyed listening to us farter out of a book literally written in 1984. And that was this episode's casual trek.
Yeah, as ever, you can find us online at Nerd and Toys website. You can find my blog at Faked Tales.
And you can find me on my blog, which is mareedlibato.wordpress.com, where I'm currently serializing a novel I wrote in 2010, and occasionally film and book reviews. Or you can try and find me on Twitter.
Yeah, good luck.
Why do that?
So yeah, that's it from us, and we'll see you next time, where we'll probably be talking about some actual Star Trek episodes, and hopefully I won't die.
And if you choose to eat a jelly baby, go to page 82. If you want to go to a Starfleet, go to page 77.
You've been listening to Casual Trek by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed-Lobato. Music by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Casual Trek's part of the Nerd and Tie Network. And if you want to support us monetarily, because you love what we do that much, you can now do that by going to Ko-fi and looking up Casual Trek. There's a link in the show notes.